Our task is, we began yesterday, is to reconstruct a Christian spirituality that is in more in tune with the created order. A spirituality that does not emphasize our difference from creation or our transcendence beyond creation, but rather recognizes and acknowledges and celebrates our solidarity with creation. I think a lot of other traditions have a lot to teach us about creation. The last six months of my wife and I, Lisa, have been traveling around the country, and it seems to have almost been a historical tour of Native American culture and what it's meant to our country and our history, especially in the Southwest. And I've gained so much from the appreciation of Native American spirituality, particularly that thing I just read about in a little book on the Indian culture around the Monterey Bay, San Francisco Bay area, in which when the Indians would wake up in the morning and walk out of their hut, they would greet the sun with a loud hurrah, and I just think that is so neat. I don't know how it is that we have come to take the sun so for granted, and yet I think if we carry away one thing from this course, perhaps it'll be that we'll greet the sun in the morning when we wake up. On the other hand, we are not Native Americans, and we can never hope to be. We can learn things from that tradition, but it's more important finally for us to return to the roots of our own tradition and to try to recover a sense of how our tradition informs us in terms of our relationship to creation. How do we understand that relationship? And to do that, I think I want to begin the session, even before we turn to Francis, is to turn to that foundation of all theology and spirituality of creation, and that is the account of the creation story in Genesis chapter 1. Listen for the word of God. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was moving over the face of the waters. And God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. And God saw that the light was good. And God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And God said, "Let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to separate the day from the night. And let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years. And let them be lights in the firmament of the heavens to give light upon the earth." And it was so. And God made the two great lights, one light to rule the day and the other light to rule the night. And God made the stars also. And God set them in the firmament of the heavens to give light upon the earth, to rule over the day and over the night, and to separate the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. I don't know when it was in the history of the church or in the history of our tradition of Christian theology that the church felt it had to, for some reason or another, drive a wedge between creation and the Creator. Perhaps there was a sense of being threatened by cultures that over-identified God with creation, that God equals world, that there was a sense of the pantheist tradition that God and world are the same thing. And perhaps our forefathers and foremothers felt that this distinction needed to be made. But the distinction has been made and is an important one, and yet it seems to me we've overcompensated. and we've almost divorced creation from the Creator and distanced them so far that there's almost no resemblance. No one doesn't bear the image of the other. There's not that creative connection between the great artist and the supreme work of art in creation. And that's something I think we are struggling to undo as we go about this work. I want to quickly review some of the major learnings that we gathered together from yesterday when we looked at the whole flow and structure of the canticle. Just a quick reminder. We talked about how these cosmic realities of sun, moon, earth, wind, fire, all of these have a cosmic objectivity. They exist outside of ourselves, and they're real, they're material. And Francis wants to hold to that and honor that reality, that physical reality. At the same time, he wants to hold up and evoke internal realities or spiritual states or ways of being, or archetypes is a word we've been using. So Francis is not spiritualizing creation or simply writing about creation out there. He's doing kind of both at once. He wants to keep that dual dimension going throughout the canticle. The other thing we immediately noticed was the designation brother and sister to the elements. We pointed out that Francis had... How many of you have heard of or read the work of Martin Buber, the Jewish theologian, and his famous book, I Thou? He talks about relationships as either I Thou or I It, and that most of our relationships are really I-It, even with fellow human creatures, there's this I-It or an impersonal kind of relationship. But what we really strive for is a sense of I-Thou with all fellow human beings. With Francis, he takes that even further. Not to say that these elements are persons, but he almost addresses all of creation as a thou in calling the elements brother or sister. And doing that, I think, is nothing more than saying these elements, all of creation, deserves reverence, deserves the respect that we commonly ascribe to a human being. It's all created by God. It all deserves to be reverenced and cherished. That's part of what I think, what I read into when I see brother sun or sister moon. The other is this feminine or masculine dimension. And we're going to be in dialogue with Francis this week. We don't necessarily have to agree with his designations, but what we want to hold up is that there is an essential continuum within human experience and within the whole spiritual quest between the masculine and the feminine. And if we lose either one, we've lost an essential dimension of what it means to be human. And that we have to hold the two together. And that's what Francis does. He doesn't address each of these elements in isolation. They're all held in kind of polarities or marriages. And that's why we're dealing with brother sun and sister moon tonight together as a kind of polarity. One without the other is lessened and diminished. Were there any questions or observations before we kind of jumped in to the...
Well, I noticed when you were reading the creation story in comparison to this, that the lights were objects, whereas here they're thous, which related to what you were just saying.
Yeah.
Just the way of referring to them was different.
Yeah.
Different quality.
I think that's the real genius of Francis that is kind of breaking through kind of a spotlight on the Christian tradition that really highlights this quality.
Right, but that's also true in other cultures, the Native Americans and others, where the elements of the universe are thous. They're personified in some way. They have
a spirit.
They have a spirit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Okay. One of my favorite stories about Francis And I thought about this last week. For those of you who were here last week, we had a little fire alarm drill in the middle of the night, and it could not have come at a worse time. Just a downpour, and all the fire crew from throughout the village had to rush out and to their assigned station and deal with it. And fortunately, it was not a real fire. It was just a lightning or something that had set off the alarm. But I thought of this story of Francis, who one night was wandering around out in the middle of the night and was just struck by the beauty of the moon, was just taken by the moonshine, just carried away in a kind of ecstasy. And he went into the village square of Assisi and started ringing the bell. That was the emergency bell. When that bell rung, you knew something was up for Assisi. I mean, it was like, this is no small matter. And the whole town congregates, and he says, "Can you believe that moon?" That's the Francis I'm drawn to. Somehow. As much as he loved the moon, though, I think the sun was preeminent for Francis, and I think that's why the whole canticle bears the name of the sun. Francis was in love with light. He felt the universe was an epiphany of light. I'm sure he was very attentive to the gradations of light that come in every day, and the quality of each day, the quality of dawn, the quality of noonday, the quality of light in the evening time. I'm sure this was not lost on Francis. He was a poet who was enthralled with the light of the sun. Enough about Francis, though. I'm still wanting to hear enough stories about Francis. I'm still wanting to hear some of your stories about either sun or moon. I'd like to hear some moment in your past or your present in which you had a special kind of encounter with either the sun or the moon. And I promise you, if you'll tell me a story, I'll tell you a story. It'll be a fair exchange. But would someone offer us just a story about a moment in which the sun or the moon was especially important to you?
When I was an exchange student in Germany, I was 16, and it was a real bad time for me to leave home. I was real lonely. I didn't know anyone over there. So I used to take these bike rides in the middle of the night out into the fields. And one night it was a real full moon, and I just sat down on the side of the road, and I was just in tears. And I remember looking up at the moon, and it was like just this purest crystal love that was in that light. And I said, "Moon, take a message to my family, because you're seeing them too, you know."
Oh.
It was just that connection that the moon sees us all on the earth. You know?
Huh. Well, did your parents teach you that song or sing to you that song when they were tucking you in bed? I wonder if this is familiar. "I see the moon sees me, the moon sees the one that I want to see. God bless the moon and God bless me, God bless the one that I want to see." Did nobody know? Maybe my mom.
Sang it in Girl Scouts.
I hadn't thought of that until you told that story.
They used to say the French folk song, "Au clair de la lune."
What? Someone else? Jan.
Well, I came to appreciate the sun very strongly when I moved to New Zealand when I was 19. And I lived in the Midwest and liked the heat. And in New Zealand, especially the south of the South Island of New Zealand, you don't get a lot of sunshine. And I came to really appreciate the kind of Celtic feeling. And I remember associating it very strongly with a song that was popular about at that time about came to pass on a summer's day when the sun was strong on every stone. And, you know, unless you've done without sunshine and lived in a place that's misty, some of you maybe live in Seattle and can appreciate this too. but on those days when the sun does break through that mist and it is strong on that stone, you really understand why people worship the sun and why the sun means life. You know, you felt that that was life, that that was the life force that you were receiving all over on every inch of you at that time.
We felt a little bit of that up here in Holden last week. And we were starting to really miss that sun when it was so cloudy day after day. And when it came back out, someone else.
One of the ways to really appreciate the sun is to be someplace where you can really see it come up. And there's no better place to see that when you're on water. And if you're on a big body of water, if you're on the ocean or someplace that's unobstructed by trees or mountains, on the west coast here you see the sun sets. If you face east, you can see the sun rise if you live on water. One of my favorite things to do, we live on Lake Superior, which is like living on the ocean because you can't see any shore on the other side. And we face east, and so we see a lot of the sun coming up facing our house. But the nicest thing to do is to go out on the water in the dark and be out on the water fishing or something when the sun comes up on Lake Superior, because if you go out in the dark and 5 o'clock in the morning in the summertime or 4:30, the sun comes up, you really see the day begin, and it's a different experience when you're on the water.
I have two stories of the moonlight and how it lit up a walk once. I was in college and I was in the outing club, and I hadn't been out in the wintertime yet. We went on a cross-country ski hike for the weekend, and we went up to the head of the trail, and there were about 20 of us, and hardly anyone knew anyone at all. We got all our gear together, and all of a sudden we looked up, and here was this full moon, and we had to hike in about 2 miles, and we hiked in along a creek, and I just remember this moonlight lighting up our way all the way. It was this guide for us all the way up, and these 20 people working together to get up to a hut way up in the woods, and it was just such a community time, and with this moonlight just sparkling the snow and glistening, and you could see the rocks and the stream, and it just was a wonderful, wonderful gathering time. And then a winter, two winters ago up at Holden here, group of us came up and we were cross-country skiing, and there was a full moon one night when we were here, and so we got on our skis and we went up to the tailings up here, and the moon just lit our way the whole way. It was just spectacular. And then when we got up to the tailings, we looked back here and this whole range is just lit up by the moonlight. It was just breathtaking. We talked about the moon and the view for at least an hour of time. It was just great.
Well, I think the sun is equal time. There was one time when it was Easter Eve, my husband had told me he didn't want to be married anymore, and I was in Hawaii at the time, and we were on a vacation, and Easter morning I got up really, really early, like about 5 o'clock, and I went out on the beach, and the sun wasn't up yet, and was just walking along, just went through that whole sun rising, you know, a sunrise service. It was my solitary sunrise service, and I looked out across the ocean to where all my, you know, church family was, and I just felt the sun connecting this, kind of like the story before, where that light of connection with my larger family. I felt a kind of renewal that, you know, I couldn't have gotten in any other way than through the sun's healing, and that whole sense of the new birth, you know, that life was continuing on. So it was a real special relationship of light. It was absolutely incredible morning too. Yeah, so.
Thank you. Yeah.
I think every month when the moon gets full, I have to go out in our backyard. And we're fortunate and surrounded by very old, very tall trees. And at night when the moon comes up high into the sky, you look up and the sky is indigo blue and the trees are this incredible green black against the sky. And the moon is so large and white and perfectly round. It's, I can't help but just stand there and just look at it for the longest time. Because it's, if you feel so close to God right there under those huge trees and under the light of that moon.
Yes. Anyone that's had a general science class usually goes through all the rigmarole with the tilt of the earth and the earth's moving around the sun and the moon around. And they, frequently in teaching classes they have these gizmos that show all this various rotations. So the fact that the sun is overhead at the, despite the fact that I navigated at sea for many years, I forget whether 22.5 degrees north is Tropic of Capricorn or Cancer. I think it's Cancer. 22.5 degrees south is Capricorn. It's first day of winter, it's over the northern 22.5 degrees of Cancer, and then first day of summer, it's directly over the equator, and then the first day of fall, and then it comes back up over the equator. And I happen to be on the equator, very close to the equator on the first day of summer. And what's called local apparent noon as the sun reaches its highest point in the sky before it starts to come down relative to the horizon, was measuring with a sextant for navigational purposes because that helps you determine your latitude. And imagine my surprise, in spite of the fact that I had these science classes and knew academically it should happen, and had navigated at sea for many years and knew that it really should happen. Imagine my surprise on the first day of summer on the equator to measure the sun at 90 degrees directly overhead, just like it was supposed to. The really consistency in all those gizmos truly did show what happened. But it's the consistency, I think, that we can count on.
You can appreciate
it's going to do that, and it really happens.
I remember my brother did mission work in Africa for a year with the Presbyterian Church, and I went to visit him, and I was dropped off by a cargo plane in what was for me the middle of nowhere on a little airstrip, and there he was sitting with his motorcycle ready to take me back into the bush, and it was getting late in the day, and he said, I don't want to alarm you, but we need to kind of be in a hurry because we need to get back to the village before dark. You know, we don't want to be out on the in the prairie after dark. So we set out on this little Honda. We're zooming back through the prairie, and to my right, the whole way was this giant African sun. I don't know if the atmosphere somehow was distorting making it look. You know, sometimes the sun looks bigger than it. If you've ever seen it before. Well, it was just huge, and it was setting. It looked like, I felt like it was kind of coming down on top of us, and we were zooming along, and I was just so struck by the beauty of it, hanging on to him. Every once in a while, we'd hit a sand pit, and I'd go literally flying right over the top of him and land in the road, and we'd get back on the Honda, and we'd keep going, and that sun is dipping, and it was like this thrill, but also it was kind of tinged with anxiety about where we're going to make it. So that was my memory of the sun that I pulled back. The moon was much like some of y'all's doing a night hike without flashlights in the Smoky Mountains, and the moonlight made everything seem bright blue, and it was luminescent, and everything was so quiet, and it was like we entered into another world completely. Did you want to?
I guess I'll just go the other way, talk about the absence of it.
Uh-huh.
When we spent the Christmas, we were living in England at the time, but then we had relatives in Norway, so we went to visit relatives in Norway over the Christmas time, you know, for about 2 weeks. Never saw the sun once in that whole period of time. Well, first of all, it doesn't stay up very long in that time frame, but in that latitude. Secondly, it was raining all the time. So you really get to appreciate maybe the lack of it, or the presence of it when there's the lack of it.
That's right.
And you can also understand that the Norwegians and English and anybody living up in that. Whenever that sun comes out, you know, they're out there with as little clothes as they can possibly wear and are enjoying the presence of the sun because they see it so infrequently.
Well, isn't it true the most basic determination of human culture, after all, really, is our proximity to the sun. You know, in terms of how close or how far we are from the equator, and we're completely unconscious of that. We just kind of assume this is the way life is here. But a lot of what the way we are and the way we perceive ourselves is shaped in terms of how close we are to the sun or how far we are from the sun. I want to shift. We're going to kind of pick up a lot of these threads in a minute, but I want to shift to another scripture reading. I've been really struggling all day with this class, trying to figure out how to get at some of this stuff, and I've been poor company for my wife, Lisa, but I came upon this psalm this afternoon, and I said, gosh, I mean, what else needs to be said? This is just, I don't know how I could improve on this, but I'd like to read it to you, and then we're going to use this as kind of a launching for our next little exercise. The heavens are telling the glory of God, and the firmament proclaims God's handiwork. Day to day pours forth speech, and night to night declares knowledge. There is no speech, nor are there words, and yet their voice is not heard. Their voice is not heard. Yet their voice goes out through all the earth, and their music to the end of the world. Let me try that again. I kind of blew it. The heavens are telling the glory of God, and the firmament proclaims the Creator's handiwork. Day to day pours forth speech, and night to night declares knowledge. There is no speech, nor are there words. Their voice is not heard. Yet their voice goes out through all the earth, and their words are music to the end of the world. Another translation does that with music. Day to day pours forth speech. It's almost as if the psalmist is sitting in a place like Holden or unlike Holden and watching the days and nights go by and just saying, wow, what else can be said about God? I mean, he's proclaiming the glory of the Creator. And what I would like for us to do is to do a study of a sacred text. The sacred text we're going to use is not the psalm or the Bible, but the sacred text of the sun, the sacred text of the moon. And to listen for this music, to listen for this speech that has no voice, to talk about that. How do we see the Creator's poetic signature on creation, particularly on the sun and the moon? So I would like for the next 15 minutes, if this side of the room would kind of huddle over here, do a kind of a small circle, and focus on the sun, and this side focus on the moon. And if these questions are helpful, use them. If they're not, and the conversation just seems to be taking off on its own in a different direction, go with it. But I'd like you to talk about what are the physical characteristics or qualities that we associate with the sun and the moon. We've kind of named some of those in the stories we've been telling. How might these qualities or characteristics point beyond themselves to the experience of the sacred, of God? And what unique role might the sun or the moon play in a creation-centered spirituality? Can we get at that? Does that seem like something we could? Let's try it. this side and this side. We can do a quick.
Which was not caused millions and billions of years ago by greenhouse effect, but by changing distances from the sun. That there are those periodic changes, light and fire, the visual aspect that gives us the opportunity to see things. Not only, first of all, just basic vision, sight. Without light, we don't have sight, even though we have eyes. Gives us colors, and golden colors are a characteristic that we associate with the sun, although someone pointed out Giorgio Keith's paintings that were so intensely white, they're stark, really, because of the difference of the light, where you see it, your location when you see the sun. Life and changing seasons, growth, and then things that happen on the sun itself, sunspots, the fusion of the sun, interference with communications on Earth, man-made things or discovered things that are affected by activities on the sun. And the fact that we know that it's a hydrogen explosion, basically, an atomic reaction, which someday will end. Someday. Are we going with questions 2 and 3 then? 2 and 3 are tied very closely together, we thought. Those qualities that I just mentioned, not in the same order, but point to a God and a creation-centered spirituality. The basic necessity for life, consistency again from God. The promises of God, that this is going to happen every day, that there will be life, and there will be growth, and there will be change, and that we can trust that this is coming, and that we can worship, in quotes, the sun without, as one of the members pointed out so succinctly, that we perhaps fell away from that for a number, many, many years because of the danger, because there was some concern about it being another deity that people did in the past, that peoples have and still do, worship a variety of things. Quick, the good word you gave me that I asked the meaning of?
Pantheism?
Pantheism. But that worshiping the sun in the context of this class and those questions, worshiping the God that made the sun, is not the same thing. Our dependency on the sun for life itself, and therefore in God for life itself. And I guess all of us thought that one comment really nailed it down, and that was truly is death and resurrection every day.
Hmm. Very good.
Did I miss something, Clay?
I like what do you mean? The one about she said something about the sun being awesome.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, it's okay to be in awe.
And I was thinking, none of us mentioned Japan, Land of the Rising Sun. You know the picture you get with that.
Well, I think that's a word that would come to Francis' lips. Awesome. You know, he talks about the splendor and this source of abundant light just spilling out and radiating. For Francis to look into the sun is to look into the very being of God, which is this wellspring of light just radiating out. And I think you all have picked up on the things that Francis would read in this sacred text of the sun. For Francis, I think the sun symbolizes sovereign reality that sustains all of life, which draws all life and all spirit to itself. For Francis to commune with the sun is to enter into a wellspring of light and to be illumined and purified in that light. For Francis, the same sun that shines from the heavens is the same sun that shines from the depths of the soul. And in those rays of light for Francis, we see and read a prophecy of what we are all to become. And I think this is what the sun represents most for Francis, is our ultimate destiny as union with God. That the sun, for Francis to look into the sun and then to bask and revel in the sunlight is to celebrate our ultimate destiny, our vocation as children of God, to be one day children of light with God. That is what comes forth from him, and I think in a reading of this canticle. Thank you, the sun group. Could we hear from the moon? Someone, very rich discussion with the moon group.
Well, we didn't have a note taker.
You know, the sun folks are always more organized.
I was observing just the way the process he was using seemed to me to be much more organized and
solar.
Rational.
This is not a rational group. The moon is to teach us about the unknowing and the mystery. A lot of what came up in our group, qualities of the moon, let's make cycles, has it's cyclic. Its presence is not always there, but there's always a promise of that presence. Other qualities.
Pure crystalline light.
Yeah.
But the mystery of the light, too, how it can transform everyday objects and things we know into, gives it a different aura, you know, or just appearance.
Suns.
Yeah. That it draws, that it creates, that it hides, mm-hmm. that it's subtle, but yet it has great influence.
Mm-hmm.
It connects us with others because it unbiasedly, you know, goes over. I mean, we all see the entire world sees the same moon, you know, and it's the same cycles and the same patterns. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And also the idea that it's the sort of a gateway to the cosmos.
Mm-hmm.
It's the object we can see most clearly. We see the craters. It's sort of a hint of the magnitude of the cosmos that's very close to us and we can experience it.
It's the light in the darkness. We talked about, you know, that it is intimately connected to the darkness. And that darkness is part of our experience of the moon. And again, we get back to the mystery that's involved around that. You know, it doesn't define things like the light of day does. It's the undefined. It's the mystery, the undefined.
You talked about the fact that your light was dependent on us from the sun people over here.
No, we considered it a separate and distinct light. We weren't being scientific.
It has its own nature, and we're honoring that nature. And the nature of the moon is that it is a light that shines in the darkness, and that light has, that it's, it may be a reflection of God, but it is nonetheless a part of God. It has its own nature in relation to that.
I think Francis was pondered the waxing and the waning as an image of the kind of his own knowledge or his own wisdom about the spiritual journey, that the process of growth always must take us through periods of decline and death mm-hmm. and loss. Mm-hmm. That the moon is the teacher of the death and resurrection, mm-hmm. of entrusting ourselves to night and learning of the light that is available to us even in times of night and darkness. As some of you said, of entrusting ourselves to mystery, of
mm-hmm.
That which cannot be seen clearly or known. You know, we were talking about how things all look differently at night. Acceptance of the nocturnal, perhaps the feminine side, the lunar side. Claire, I think, played this lunar role in Francis' life and balanced him out. In which he could touch his pain, touch the things that were unfinished, incomplete, that were still forming, dying, being reborn. Claire helped Francis relate to that part of himself.
It was out of darkness that creation began. And it's sort of like understanding the deeper nature of God, in a sense, to understand the darkness. I mean, sometimes we go towards the light so much,
right,
and we don't go towards the darkness, but to recognizing in a way that's like the inner part of us,
mm-hmm,
the part that's unseen. And I think that our experience of night and of the moon often parallels that sense of, without words, experience of God, that, you know, in the light we don't always define it that way. And that's a real important part of our sacred experience of God, is recognizing that.
That's a very important observation. We think in terms of dichotomies. Light is good, darkness is bad. And yet the creation story, and what you've just said so eloquently, is that both light and darkness are gifts from God and part of it. Would anyone else like to offer anything? Right here, Lisa, and then did you want to speak?
Well, I hear, and that's just special because of your questions. It's brought out so strongly that the spiritual characteristics are tied directly to the physical characteristics. The moon symbolism there, what it does for us, and then how different the sun, and so that's
mm-hmm.
nice to understand with what, you know, you brought out in asking us to examine this, to see this in a new way.
Interestingly enough, of course, physically they both work together on the Earth, and their gravitational pull seen so clearly in ocean tides, and then the attending currents that are caused by the change in tides, and its impact on sea life, 70% of the surface of the Earth, as they operate together in conjunction or in opposition in that physical characteristic.
Well, the hour is upon us. I'm very grateful for the reflection that we shared together. This was very rich for me, and I look forward to exploring some of the other parts of our creation with you, if you'd like. To close, I would be very honored if someone. If two people in the moon group would read first the line, the bolded line in the sheet that is the canticle, and then the meditation in response. And then if two folks in the sun group would read, perhaps we'll start with the sun, if someone would read the bolded lines that are Francis and then the meditation in response with someone else. And then this will be our closing prayer, and then if we could have that over
just
here.
The parts of the moon.
Just the sun, Francis' lines, and then the response, and then on this side, Francis' lines about the moon, and then the response. Is that someone willing to do that?
Most High, all powerful, all good Lord, all praise is yours, all glory, all honor, and blessing. To you alone, Most High, do they belong. All praise be yours, my Lord. Through all that you have made, and first, my Lord, brother, son, who brings the day and light you give us through him. How beautiful is he, how radiant in all his splendor. Of you, Most High, he bears the likeness.
Beloved brother, son, chosen one of the heavens who brings us each day, we give you thanks. You give bountifully of your heat and light, that doing the work of our days, we may bear fruit and fulfill the promise of our creativity. Brother, son, you draw our gaze within to that which is deepest and most divine in us. From summer to summer, you bless us with the vision of the seasons so that we may know the cycles of our lives and the truth of our unfolding transformation.
All praise be yours, my Lord, through sister moon and stars. In the heavens you have made them bright and fair.
Sister moon and stars, we thank God for you as you shine in the darkness of the night. All praise to God for sister moon, who each month passes through all the phases of change. Waxing and waning, you remind us how change occurs in us. In the darkness of ourselves, we are illumined only as we trust ourselves to the mystery of the night. Sister Moon, so precious and so fair, you teach us about death and resurrection, and for this we give praise to God for you.